Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have brought to you an amazing show today. We have amazing guests, interesting topics, and as always, we have absolutely no idea where this conversation is going to go. But after nearly 200 episodes, I guarantee it is going to be good. It's going to be fun. So before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I asked you to do each and every day. And that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone within your network, someone on your friend list, someone around you. Maybe it's a coworker, maybe it's a spouse, a parent, a child. I don't know. But someone needs to hear this information. And they are not going to hear it unless you share it with them. So go ahead and share the show. And while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Ms. Katrina Roddy. Katrina worked 30 years in corporate insurance before being laid off. It was at that moment when she chose to take her acquired skills in corporate and marry them to her entrepreneur spirit to become an author, entrepreneur coach. In her book, Steal Your Skills from Corporate, she will help you build structure around your new career as well as support you through the transition of being an employee to CEO of your life. Good morning, Katrina. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining me. I was so interested in having you because I can completely relate. After being laid off 8 times, it was like, wait a minute, I got to figure this out because this whole employee thing is not working out for me. But I was sad because, you know, I kept trying to look for jobs and people saw me as someone who job hopped. I'm sure you're familiar with that experience. And then I went to an interview and the representative said to me, he said, oh, wow, Sharifa, you have the resume of an engineer. You have so many different skills. And from that moment, my view and my mindset changed. I'm sure you can relate, Katrina.
That's amazing. Usually people get to about round 4 before they get tired of layoff or what I call the corporate breakup. And I call it a corporate breakup. You mentioned some of the things in it. It's mostly because when it's like a regular relationship breakup, right? So when you break up, you go through anxiety, you go through, you know, the stress that comes with that, sleep disturbances, and all of those things happen during a corporate breakup and nobody ever talks about it. You know, they just tell you to go find another job and then that becomes a hurdle. But in a regular relationship, they're like, take time, work on yourself, get yourself together. And so that's what I really promote when I talk about the corporate breakup. And when it comes to stealing your skills from corporate, you said everything my book is about. Take everything you've learned. And sometimes skills can be a metaphor for, I'm sorry, sometimes corporate can be a metaphor for life. Just take those life skills, identify those skills, and then jump into something that's more fulfilling to you. And that's what I did. It sounds like that's what you did as well.
Absolutely. So tell us about your journey to get to where you are.
Oh, gosh. So I literally started in corporate. I've probably been about 32 years now. But right out of high school, I got a job that was part of my college. So my corporate job, my business job would report back to my school and that was a class for me. So that's how I started off so early. So right out of high school. And through that journey, you know, I was promoted. I loved it. Corporate actually paid for me to go to college. So I'm not stuck with college tuition debt because of tuition reimbursement. All of those things happen. But along my journey, what I found out is, you get to a certain point, even though I would always feel like the youngest in my department, I was kind of a dinosaur because I had been in it so long. And the newcomers that had come in, you know, everyone caters to the new people that are coming in. So when I got laid off, there was probably 5 of us. 4 of them say, yay, I'm going to retire. And I said, that's not an option for me. That's not an option. So what I ended up doing was I knew I did not want to go back to corporate. So I just started exploring that entrepreneur side I had. And how I know I had that is because I would always try different things. And in my role as a sales executive, I could pretty much shape it to the way I wanted it to look. So therefore, I knew I had some type of entrepreneur spirit. And that's where I am today.
Yes, but I think we often find that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, one of the things that stands out for me in what you were saying is I've been working for a long time. I've been working since I was about 11 years old, helping my dad with his plumbing company. And then my dad's friend who owned a sprinkler company got the contract to do the irrigation system for the 105 freeway when they built it here in Los Angeles. And so my dad was like, well, my daughter could help you. You know, this is huge profit project. So at 16 years old, I'm the office manager for this huge project. Then at 18, I'm not going to take you through my whole story, but I'm making a point. At 18, my first job out of high school was working for TWA, for Trans World Airlines. Yep, so I went from one job to another job to another job. There was never a thought of, oh my God, am I going to get a job? Will I find a job? Will I get hired? It wasn't until about 2001 where this whole mentality, and I got laid off for the first time, where I started getting laid off over and over and over again. And I know a lot of people went through the same experience. But one of the things that you touched on, Katrina, was that people didn't understand the mindset of being laid off. When you quit a job, you usually have a plan B, something else that you want to do. You're moving across the country. You want to be a stay-at-home spouse, parent, whatever it is. Or if you get fired from a job, you know, even though, you know, we're not going to tell Scott and John that I really did it, I was wrong, and they fired me. I know it in my heart of hearts that I was wrong, you know, but when you're laid off, I tell people I had employee of the month. I had just received evaluations that said I was the best thing since sliced bread. And the next day they're like, Sharifa, this is your last day. So it affected me in a way that most people didn't understand. Can you speak to that a little, Katrina?
Absolutely, absolutely. So same thing. I felt like I was at the top of my game, and I worked in corporate insurance. So I worked with some of the very large major accounts. Really loved what I was doing. I felt like this was where I was going to retire. I had been there 10 years, and it just felt really good. And then all of a sudden I get a call from he's retired now. He was my boss at the time, and said, hey, just want to let you know that they're going to let me go. And I was like, oh my God. And he's like, you know, so we got to put together the plans that we'd been working on for you. Then he called back like 2 hours later and said, oh no, they're going to let us go. And I was devastated. I had a son about to go to college. I'm a single mom. I'm just like, it was so much that became overwhelming for me. And to be honest with you, the year after that happened, I cried for the entire year. Even though I went and got another job, I went and started working as an independent contractor. But still, it just felt really icky to me. I'm like, why me? You know, I never came in touch with myself to say, you know what, it's your time. I hadn't been walking around, and this is really, I want people to really understand this. Be careful in the words you speak, because they will manifest. And so I had been walking around for maybe, you know, a year or two before that happened, and said, you know what, by the time I turn 50, I am going to be doing what I want to do anyway, because I've been in this so long. And I just kept saying it over and over. And it happened before that. But for me, it was more of God's way of saying, yes, when you turn 50, it's going to be in place already. Let me have you work out the kinks before you get there. So I'm happy to say I will be turning 50 this year, and the kinks are working out. So I took it that way. I looked at it as a positive, and I haven't looked back.
I know that feeling well. That's part of my journey. I keep telling people God kept shutting the door. He kept closing the door so I can do so many other things. Now, Katrina, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who probably has a pretty good idea of what we've been talking about, Mr. Scott Ballard. Scott is a coach, speaker, author, confidence coach. By asking deep questions, he helps business owners, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and leaders create insight, breakthroughs, and transformation to take their business and their life to the next level. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. This is really good. Yeah.
I like your desk and your office. You got that Star Trek chair going on there. I just want to get beamed up.
Oh yeah, this is kind of the mothership now. I call it Zoom Airlines. You know, I'm all over the world talking to people, and I don't leave my office, which is actually very good. So yeah, that's great.
Is that new to the pandemic, or something you've been doing for years?
No, the last 5 years, I had a client that told me about Zoom 5 years ago, and he was on the East Coast, actually where John is in North Carolina. And he said, let's just use this as we're working together. And I hadn't heard of it. And since then, I've just used it as a tool and talk about a time saver, travel saver. And, you know, I can talk to somebody in Africa, then in England, and now down in LA in a day, and I never leave my office. So it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I agree. I've been using Zoom for years, doing my interviews on Zoom for years, but I know for a fact that had it not been for this global pandemic, I would never have been able to get 5 guests per day, 5 shows a week, because people were like, no, I don't do the Zoom thing. I only network offline. I got to talk in person. And now everyone's on Zoom.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's a fantastic tool. And if somebody like me, I'm not a techie person, if I can actually use it and use it efficiently, and in my work, it's really important, and it's deep connection. So yeah, really good. Yeah.
I think it's also a sign of the times and how we adjust as a people, because I have had so many guests on the show who said, you know what, Sharifa, it would have never occurred to me to use Zoom or do so much of my business on Zoom, but I am not going back. I'm like, it's here to stay.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. We use it, and we do a lot of very deep coaching, and it's very personal and very relational and transparent. And we did have a little bit of concern about that, but it's never been an issue. And it's allowed us to really connect and be more connected to our clients all over the world because of the technology. So yeah, it's a big bonus for us.
Yes. Now, we were speaking to Katrina. She was sharing her journey. I was sharing my journey. I'm pretty sure with the entrepreneurs that you talk to, they have pretty similar journeys.
Yeah. Well, the journey that I related to both of you is my own story. I'm doing now what I've been doing since I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So when this all started for me, I grew up in a small town in Southern Oregon, went to school at 7 years of age, and about 2 months into school, Sharifa, I realized I wasn't learning like the other kids. And I was kind of like, okay, what's wrong with me? What's wrong? The teacher came to my home back in the 60s. That teachers actually came to your house and met with your parents. And she goes, you know, you got to try harder. And my parents were pretty structured, and they said, work harder. And I did. And it got worse and it got worse. And then at the end of the year, she said, oh, you've got to do first grade again. And I had this shame and this fear, and really deep, dark thoughts kind of came into my mind. Depression, suicide. And then they finally figured out, well, he's severely dyslexic. He doesn't learn like the other kids. So I got into this whole thing of thinking, and my teacher said to me, you're stupid, and you'll never be anything but a janitor.
Oh, wow.
To an 8-year-old.
That's horrible.
That's really hard. And so what I did is I just shut down myself. But what I could see in other people, kind of my God-given ability, is I could see their genius, their greatness, their abilities. And so I started to actually put my energy in seeing that in people and encouraging them and helping them with that. Then I got to sixth grade. They actually kept passing me because I was so good with the other kids and the teachers. I walked into the sixth grade classroom. We had a first-year teacher, and he said, we're going to do learning totally different. Well, at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to start over again. I'm like, I just want out of this whole school thing. And he said, take all the desks out of the classroom. We're going to turn the whole classroom into a business. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to get a business, and everybody's going to get like $50, and we're going to have the stock market, and we're going to learn all of our subjects through the funnel of a business. And so Mr. Bacala did this. Well, we started out, I can't fully explain it as an 11, 12 year old, but I kind of got it. And so I started with a little business where I rented the ball if you wanted to play basketball at recess, and I'd rented it to you. And then I owned the popcorn machine. And I started, by the end of the year, long story short, I owned pretty much every business and had almost all the money in my classroom.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't read and write for my life. I mean, I was totally, but I really understood that. And so that really helped me get through to high school. And school was always D's and F's for me. It was failing fast and really hoping that they would just push me forward so I could get out. And so I got out, I got married very young. We've been dating now 43 years, married 40. And I said, well, I can't do college because I still struggle in that system, but maybe I could be a business person because my sixth grade experience just really resonated with me. So I started 10 businesses in my 20s. I failed at every one, lost all the money, failed. And my wife kept saying, what did you learn? How can we do it better next time? And I believe in you and I think this can happen. Well, the 11th time it did happen, got into an industry, didn't know anything about it, started a business with $100 at our kitchen table, and 5 years grew it to 42 states and the third largest seller of that one product in the country. And the way I did it was by hiring people for their genius. I would interview them and I'd see, what is the greatness that they have? What is the skill? What do they naturally do that's phenomenal that they don't even see, but I could put into my company, and then I could encourage them and go, you own this and you can do this. And so we built a company and did that for 21 years, sold it to a large life insurance on the East Coast. And so about 13 years ago, I was like, I'm not a retired person. I'm not a golfer. I got a lot of ideas, a lot of energy. What do I do? And people started calling me and saying, can I ask you a question about my business or about my leadership team or about hiring the CEO? And I did for about 3 years. And I came home one time, my wife said, she picked me up at the airport. She goes, you know what you're doing is a business. And I go, no, I'm just helping David out. It's just, I'm just doing, you know. And she goes, no, this is people pay and whatever. So she said, call David. I called him. I said, do you have a budget for this? Do you even pay? He goes, well, yeah, I was waiting for your invoice, you know, for coaching, for what you're doing. Long story short, that's what I do. I help people exchange the lies that they've believed about themselves for the truths that are really true about them. And then to live that out, to change the world, make a difference, make an impact. And that's what we haven't worked in 10 years because I get to do what I love to do. And it's a great passion.
Wow, it sounds like it. No, it sounds like it. It's very interesting. I love the story. I love the genius. And when you were telling it, I just had to laugh. It reminded me of myself. You know, I don't remember what grade it was, but I was struggling with math and the teacher was trying to teach me and they were telling me, oh, do this, do it this way, do it that way. And I couldn't figure out the numbers in the math. And then she said something. She was like, well, if you had $5 and you spent $3.70, I was like, oh, I knew, when you talk to me in dollars and cents, that's all you had to do. They laughed because if you've ever seen Silver Spoons with Michael J. Fox, when he could count the money, that was me. Like, if you put it in dollars and cents, I got it. That's all you have to do. Scott, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. John M. Quigley. John has been developing products for more than 30 years and is the author of many business and product development books, as well as scores of magazine articles at nearly 60 different outlets. He has ceded 7 U.S. patents to the companies at which he has worked. He is a guest lecturer at universities around the globe and speaker on product development, product management, and project management topics. John has multiple master's degrees and holds globally recognized certifications in project management professional, as well as CTFL, Certified Tester Foundation Level. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing well.
It's a pleasure to have you. I don't know if I can hold this conversation, though. You have so many master's degrees. I graduated from the University of Hard Knocks. Like, that's where I go.
I had a few of those too. I grew up in a trailer park. So I started out in, I would call it kind of modest. And the reason I have multiple masters, Katrina, is the learn your craft from your employer kind of mentality. I was surprised there was not so many people that avail themselves of these. I have two masters courtesy of the companies at which I've worked. You know, they made it about as easy as it could be. No loan, no money out of my pocket if I did it right and could do and could keep the grades up and keep the job going. So I'm a little surprised so few people avail themselves of those kind of opportunities.
Do you think it's the people that avail themselves or the companies that offer it? Because to me, I feel like there were so many different benefits like that one, health benefits, you know, the loyalty from the company that started to go away in about 2008 or so.
Oh, okay. So all my master's happened before that. So
yeah.
You might be right that those benefits are no longer there. Which is all the more reason to take advantage of them when the company provides them. And they're not really giving them to you. They're kind of, you kind of earn those things. And chances are good if in my experience, you're taking that advantage of those things, they're going to expect more from you. So it's absolutely an investment on their part as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So apparently you're the king of patents.
What is that saying in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is or woman is king or queen? I'll take it just because of that. But for me, it's the creative process I really enjoy, and helping folks get through that. I consult with a lot of organizations or businesses how to get past some difficulty they have, mm-hmm. either in how the part is manufactured or in some cases, they'll say something like that, don't want to make this. And I'm like, your competition is making it. You could do it much better. And their customers want it. So it's not really your call, for example. It's what do your customers want? That's what you're here for, right? So kind of those kind of coaching events and a little bit more on the technical side. My first degree is an engineering degree from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. So I'm still kind of engineering centric kind of person. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the articles and stuff I write are going to be in the vein of product development or product development teams working together to produce something.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you are the king of patents, which we're going to give you, do you have a certain process in which you start into patent or product development? Do you, you know, because most people, I believe, and I've heard the expression, I actually use the expression, there are cemeteries full of million-dollar ideas, which, you know, means that most people take their ideas to the grave. We have these wonderful ideas, but we don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to move forward with it. So do you have a process or kind of way that you typically advise people to go?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the first things you need to do from my experience is to blurt these things, voice them around people that might be interested in them, that could help you bring this thing to fruition. Because the thing about patents, they generally are not a one person deal. Even if you see one person's name on there, chances are very good there's been a lot of other interaction to bring it to that point. Even if it's brought to the patent attorney and all the creativity is from that individual, there have been a lot of ideas kicked around or perspectives that were or coaching that was brought to bear on the problem to create the intellectual property or the patent. So for me, a large part of it is to look at a problem. And when you start thinking in terms of this is how we typically do it, to get away from that and start saying things like, there's got to be a better way. And in fact, many of the patents, probably four of them, I'm not a smoker. I don't care if people smoke, but I'd work in a lab with a bunch of people and they would walk out and go to a place outside where they could smoke around the like a picnic table with an umbrella. Geese were out there sometimes in the spring. It's kind of nasty because I'd go look at the geese and they'd want to chase me off. I'm just looking at them. They think I'm going to steal their eggs. But anyway, they'd go out and they'd smoke a cigarette out there, and I'd go out there and we'd ask questions. How come we're doing this? Wouldn't it be great if, you know? And we start kicking ideas around, and I'd make note of those and put them in some kind of format documentation, not formalized, but just blurting our ideas. And then we'd start structuring meetings and discussions and explorations around those things, mm-hmm. and eventually culminating in and like we're like, hey, this is unique and nobody else has done this. So let's go send it to the patent attorney or to management, see what they think. It was never with a goal of building, of creating a patent. It was more of exploration and then, huh, this might be cool. Much of my career is like that. I've not had a goal in my mind that I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. I'm going to go here and do that. It's been more of whatever. In fact, I wrote a LinkedIn article about it some years back. It's been more of it. What piques my interest? Hey, this looks interesting. Let's go explore over here. And similar with the intellectual property and the patents. So the key is to not let it stay in your head, I think. Get it in front of some other people that gives it a little bit more energy. Don't limit your thinking to what you immediately know, because that's probably going to kill you or kill the product or kill the project. And explore. Don't be afraid to.
But do you feel that many people are afraid to put their idea out there because they're afraid someone is going to steal it?
That might be some of it. Yeah, it's probably a significant part. I think it's more afraid that I might say something stupid and somebody is going to say, dude, that already existed 20 years ago or 10 years ago, or what you're saying is just ludicrous. That technology never be that, right? Mm-hmm. I think you couple those two together, you're probably taking the top percentage why people don't say, why they don't say these things or voice these things they're thinking about. The thing is, if it's in your head and it goes no further and goes to the graveyard, is that better than if somebody else stole it from you and made it come to pass? I mean, just, I'm not sure. I think that's those things are equal. I think it might be better that the idea see the light of day if it is an interesting idea than for it to get buried.
Excellent point. Katrina, what are your thoughts so far? We heard from Scott and John, who basically have the same message on how long they've been doing this and why they do it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm listening to John and I have my own graveyard of ideas. I think I own my own cemetery. The other day I just came up with something. I'm like, huh. And I think a lot of what you said, John, is people just don't know where to go with that information. Like, how do I even get that process started? And I know that's for me. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. Here's a good example. In my neighborhood or in my city, there's a lot of carjackings right now. I mean, a lot. So the carjacking crime is very high. So me, you know, I'm just thinking, well, yeah, if Volvo, it has to be the safest car out there, why can't they just do face identity when you get in the car? And that way it doesn't stop. Like, I have these ideas. I don't know if they exist now. I don't know if they're in the works, but I just come up with them. And then I put them in the graveyard when they're done. That's
a very good idea. And there's some, I don't think face recognition is there. I've not heard that, but there are Volvo trucks, the heavy trucks.
Yeah.
They use a face scan to watch your eyes. And they watch your eyes. So, because if you know when you've driven long legs, your eyes kind of,
yep,
they get a little slow to open and things like that. So I usually roll the window down and turn the stereo up really loud. Go at it. But so there's some parts of this already available. I mean, the recognition of where your eyes point and make sure they're actually looking on the road at the road instead of too long away from the road, or you're drowsy and warn you that these things. So it doesn't seem like a far leap to make something like what you're talking about. Yeah, that does seem.
This is how far I got with that, John. I looked up research and development department of Volvo because I was going to send it to them. And when I did that, it said job openings for, and I said, I'm in the wrong spot. And I stopped.
Yeah.
So I do. I have that graveyard. As far as Scott hit on something that was very, near and dear to me as well. When he started talking about high school and how he got to his career. So I wanted to, I will be repurposing my book right now as part of, stealing your skills from corporate. But what I learned through my son's college experience and how much, whatever you think college costs, add a zero to it. And that's what it costs, because it's horrible. But I do realize that there are some kids, you know, as John mentioned, and I'm sorry, as Scott mentioned, that may not want to go to school or, you know, do anything of that sort. So I want to be able to take my book and repurpose it and talk to some of the high schools about, you know, let's start a business. Let's figure out how to start a business where you could actually make some money. Learn a trade. I'm not going to tell you to stop learning because you're always learning about everything. And so if you think you're not going to college, doesn't mean you're not going to learn. You're still going to go to some sort of schooling to get to a point where you have to get to. But I think it was very important that he said that because that's exactly what I've been thinking. The second part of me repurposing my book is also for individuals who were in prison, you know, and they get out and they don't have a place to go. You know, I watch a relative of mine struggle with this because they always have to put down, hey, you know, I was incarcerated for X amount of years and then they get brushed over. I know there are some programs out there with some of these bigger companies now, but still, if I can teach you just to use your skills to create your own business, that would be awesome for me. So those are the two things I heard when listening to you guys.
Well, what I want to say, and then I'm going to allow Scott to respond, but Katrina, you're not at the graveyard. That's the most important thing to take away, is that's years and years and years. So there's still time and there's still hope. Am I wrong, John?
No, you're not wrong. That's exactly right.
All right.
And the learning part is especially true. Always. ABL. Always be learning.
Always be learning. I got
not
it.
Not that ABC, always be closing. I guess that's true if you're a salesperson.
I'm going to learn and then close it because I had a sales background. So that's all I
know. God, what were your thoughts on what Katrina had to say?
Yeah. I think the thing that it makes me think about is the question of who. So when we get an idea, to get back to John's process, which I love, the first thing that I have learned to do, because I have this really healthy, limited view of what my greatest ability is to think, who do I know or who can I reach out to that might have more information, insight, ideas, or thoughts around this idea? Because I work with a lot of people that have these companies, and it was originated out of an idea from them working on their car in their garage at home, and they create a tool or whatever, you know, all these different things. But when they get stuck, inevitably they get stuck when they quit asking who else could help make this a reality? Who else could help bring this to the market? Who else could help make a prototype of this? Who else is an expert that I could put on the team to move this forward to actually doing what it's supposed to do in the world, creating value, serving people, that type of thing. And so that's, you know, I had to learn that from my dyslexia as a kid, because I couldn't write the history paper because the teacher couldn't read it and it never made sense. So I had to find the smartest girl or guy in my class and some way work a deal and say, well, you're a great writer. What can I do for you? And what, and you could maybe write the paper, I could speak it out or whatever. So my whole life has been about seeing the who that is around me and drawing on that and bringing people together to get something done. And so even with CEOs, even with entrepreneurs that are super successful, it's easy to silo and think, I've got to figure this out myself. It's all on me. Well, it never is. The greatest collaboration, the greatest impact is when we put people together and then have the shared vision or mission or purpose or whatever to serve the customer of the world, whatever. I love John saying, and you know, but I wrote down on my notepad, who?
Right.
Who help me?
Right. But what stands out to me, Scott, and just listening to you as a kid, you were a deal maker. Like, it's the art of the deal. You were willing and dealing naturally as a kid. And so many people can't learn that skill. They feel like they can't. But some people, it just comes naturally.
But I had to. So survival is either commit suicide at 8 or 9 years of age. And that's where I was at. I came very close to that. So I understand how you can be sucked into, this is all on me and I got to figure this out and I'm on my own and nobody cares or believes or understands that I can do anything. And so then I chose a different way. And I said, well, look at these people around me. They're amazing. But I couldn't see it myself, but I could see it in them. So I've always had that lens of, gosh, if you surround yourself with really smart people, people that have all these gifts and talents, boy, it's pretty amazing what you can do, you know? And so.
I like that what you're saying, because when I coach people, I never admit that I know everything. What the people do know about me is that I'm extremely resourceful. And so, you know, a lot of times when I go to networking, I like to tell people networking is not for me. It's not for you. It is for you to become a resource to somebody else. So the more I learn about other people and what they do and how they do things, I pull them into my circle. So, you know, we get to the business part of me coaching them. I say, you know, now you have access to my executive team. And that means you have a financial advisor. That means you have another coach if you need some help in another area. You have all of these people. You have a chef. You have health advisors. You have all of these people to help you get through what you can, because I have access to them. So the more I learn about other people, the more I share with people.
But let me just ask you this, Katrina. I was listening to Scott and his who, and I was listening to what you had to say. And we were talking to John about this patent and building the team. But I also feel like people are concerned that they won't have the resources to be able to afford it. Like you and your team, that has to be about a quadrillion dollars worth of information. So it's like, I don't know if I can afford that. Do you feel that that's a concern for people?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely a concern. So what I do is the people that I work with are the people that I work with them personally as well. So there could be, like John said, there could be some bartering involved. There could be because you're working with her and I know that there's an X amount that you're paying her, we could work out a deal. Like there's deals to be made all the time. Or you can go to, like, you know, there's some free courses. There's stuff that could happen, even if it's not at a level. If you learn, if you take away anything, even if it's a free course, you've learned something.
I just laughed and smiled, because when you mentioned there's a deal, you kind of smiled. And I felt that same energy with Scott. It's like there are certain people, it's just like, for me, I have to have a deal. It has to be some type of deal. It's almost like that feeling of being in Vegas, you know, it's like the art of the deal. Are you like that, John?
Yeah, exactly. And what I've learned over the years is, so I write a lot of magazine stuff, my articles. And one of the places I write, I do a lot of project management work, is at PM Tips. Now, you don't get what you don't ask for. So when they approached me about writing, or I approached them, I can't remember, I said, this is usually what it looks like. And they're like, we'd rather not do that. We don't usually do that. And I said, I'll tell you what, you create some kind of advertising. And they made the proposal and they did something really, really nice. So I write along with a guy named Steve Locke, one of the other people I work with, a recurring column over there every other week for this nice page of advertisement material and well done. I mean, they put a lot of effort in. So those deals, those are important. I mean, not everything has to be a barter. I can write stuff pretty fast once I get the traction on it, right? The idea, the seed, if I got that, we can do something fast. Getting that now, that might take a little bit of time. And which leads me a little bit to the next thing I would like to talk about is, we're talking about people that have moved from job to job to job to job.
That's me.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of people probably. But the thing is, each one of those things gives you a different perspective. Did you know that a group of people that encounter the same circumstance can all come away with a different perspective, a different fundamental learning, right? So I'm on a project, the project crashes, right? Everybody around the table that was on that project will have a different spin on why the project met its demise. They might all be right, might be one or two of them. And maybe it's likely a combination of some or all of these events that actually caused the thing to crash, which leads me to the whole who. It's part of the self-sufficient part of the thing is getting enough experiences and being able to step out of what you see and what you immediately want to call it and look at it from multiple angles. And you're still going to need the who, don't get me wrong. But part of the problem with not thinking who or not being able to escape this perspective problem, you have a problem. I had a problem. I coached a guy. He had a problem with packaging the product, and he kept stalling here. And he told me what his problem was. I went online on a conference call with him, and I said, "Go to this website, check this part out. The dimensions look like it would work exactly for what you're talking about." He went over there, and he's like, "I never thought of this," right? Because he didn't have that little piece of experience or association that would make him draw, meet that. And it saved him weeks more of work. It already cost him many weeks longer than he needed it to cost. So it's not just the who, it's the experiences those who's have. You can't discount that. That brings a lot to the table. Even if they have similar events like you, chances are the takeaways from those events have nothing to do with what you brought away.
I like that. I think that is the essence, part of the essence of Ask Sharifa and my business at AskSharifa.com is because I always tell people I not only help people to make money, I help them to save money. Because I built my first website in 1994. I've been doing this for a long time. And when you're just starting out, people can tell you anything, that you need a hosting account and that's going to cost you $15,000 and your domain name is $200. And I'm like, what? You know, and I helped them with that information. But it was an interesting point that you made, John. And it reminded me of why they say it's so hard to get eyewitness testimony. A police officer can ask 20 people, you know, what was their account of this incident? And everybody has experienced it from their own, you know, viewpoint. And they're looking at exactly the same point or the same thing. Katrina, what are your thoughts?
That's good stuff. I was just thinking about, like, you know, my nerd side came out when I used to watch episodes of a show called Brain Games on Discovery Channel. And what you just described was one episode where they had one scene and then all of these different people saw it. And when they pulled them all separately, they all had different things to say. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting about, you know, you never know. First of all, that's why I tell people to share their story. You know, when I coach and I try to get them to move away from, you know, their mindset, I like to tell people to make moves. And MOVES is an acronym for mindset reset. You know, they have to own their own title, which is the CEO of their life. They have to value their relationships by building a board of directors. And then they have to evaluate their money. That's the E, evaluate their money situation and their relationship with money. You know, ask themselves, why do they have that relationship? And then the S part of that is share your story. A lot of people are so afraid to share their story because they're embarrassed. They don't know how people will receive it. But to you guys' point, when you share your story, you don't know how someone else will receive that. That's the point of it. And they could take away from that what they can. There's a lot of times, and this is happening more often than not, I've started pitching and writing in magazines as well. And I just share my story. You never have writer's block as long as you can talk. So you just keep talking and you talk in your own voice. And all of a sudden someone wakes up and say, that's my story. I love that. This is her perception of it. My idea is we all have the same problems, right? But it's how we handle them that makes us unique. It makes us different from the other person. So that's the reason that you have to share all the time. I have text messages now. We're just having a conversation with someone and they will text me back and say, oh my God, you changed my perspective. You changed my life on this. Here's how and I'm sitting here thinking I didn't really say anything, but that's not what they took from that. You know, it's the experience that they took from it. And how I handled it or how I adjusted them to think about it. And that kind of makes me feel good.
That should make you feel good. I have been accused of being an oversharer. Okay. People tell me, Sharifa, you share way too much. And it's because I want people to understand that they're not going through it alone, that they're not the only one who's going through it. And I've been through so much, but I've gone through that for other people. And that's one of the things that I've learned. That so often people will come to me and they'll tell me their story and they'll make their excuses and they'll tell me, you know, I can't do it because I'm like, let me tell you about Scott Ballard. Watch this show, what he's went through. So if he can do it, then you can do it. So it's for other people. And that's why I share or overshare, however you want to look at it. But Scott, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned two specific teachers. There was the teacher who basically tried to ruin your life, maybe unintentionally. And then there was the teacher who figured out a way to make learning easier for you. Were you able to show, to meet or see either of those teachers later on for them to see your progress?
Yeah, I my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Bacala, he ended up moving on and being a principal of a school in Seattle. But yeah, I was able to connect with him 25 years later. And so it was just a really cool thing to let him know how he'd made a difference in my life. My first grade teacher, Mrs. Matthews, passed away before I got old enough in my adult life to really kind of come to grips with that whole, situation. But I wanted to speak to one other thing here that both John and Katrina were saying, and part of this process of discovering is what is the mindset that we choose to believe? So I had to choose to believe either my first grade teacher or my sixth grade teacher. And the difference is the mindset of my first grade teacher was of scarcity, was of there's no value in me, there's no future for me. Or my sixth grade teacher would said, this is something you're phenomenal at, and we're going to actually encourage and build on this gift that you have. And that's thinking. Do we believe that the world is abundant in opportunity for us to go and be all that we can be? Or do we believe that there's really nowhere to go? And that inherently, we have to figure that out, and we have to choose that. The problem is so many people have chose this scarcity, this lack, this there is no answer, there's no way forward mentality in our country, that they're stuck. I call it in my coaching, when I do hot seats, it's stuckedness. You're stuck and you've been there 11 years. Like, because you believe there's no way out, there's no hope, there's no way forward for you. So we have to do that work first. And that is exchanging that lie for a truth of, you know what, there is something for you. Yeah. And I hold the belief for people until they can hold it for themselves, just like my mother and my grandmother did for me, and just like my sixth grade teacher and my high school coaches and my wife for 43 years, which is like, I believe that God, that there's something phenomenal that I'm going to do, even though everything in society tells you, you don't have a degree, you can't read, you can't write, you're never going to everything. I had to decide to shut that all out, Sharifa, and say, I'm going to listen to the voice that says that there is something I can do to make a difference in the world. And I'm going to go to that light. I'm going to go to that place, and I'm going to live there. And that's the story that I chose to believe. But we have to recognize we're believing either the lie or the truth. And that is manifested in our life, in our everyday experience. As listening to John and Katrina, yourself, you've chosen to see that, you know what, there's possibility, there's abundance, there's bigger things for me. Your 200 episodes is resounding proof that that is true.
Yes.
I love that. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Thank you. On. I love that. John, what were your thoughts on what Scott had to say?
Well, first of all, I envy folks that can remember back that far for some reason or another.
It was painful, John. It was really painful.
I reckon it was, yeah. Because I'm thinking, for me, that part is kind of a blur. There were some key folks, and I remember what they did, Mr. Gilchrist being one of them, and mm-hmm. Mr. Stroud being another. But there's no way I would remember all of these things. But I'm, as Scott was talking, I was reminded of a saying. I can't remember who said it. whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right or correct. And I thought, well, that's pretty spot on. But as I'm, what did I call it? Okay, I'm an engineer by my first degree, right? So I'm kind of a proof kind of guy or kind of person. I call myself a little bit of a skeptic. I don't shut things down the minute I think I want to explore something. I find a way to see if what I think is right or what somebody else thinks is right, right? Let's go explore. Let's run an experiment. Let's do some kind of test to understand. So I think you have to walk out with a fundamental belief that, like Scott was saying, that there are two options in how I think about these things. I'm reminded of in management, in my MBA class, they taught us about theory X and theory Y. These are managers. I can't remember which one is which, but say, for example, theory X says people are lazy and you really have to stay on them and you have to keep pushing them to get them to do the right thing. Theory Y, get out of their way and they will do the best that they can, help them, coach them, guide them along their way. And I have a feeling that if you're a manager with X or you're a manager with Y, you get the performance out of your team that either resembles X or Y. The fact that you think this is how this works ultimately becomes how it works because of the things you do in the system to make it work that way. If you think people need to be hounded, you're going to behave like somebody who needs to be leaning on their team all the time. And your team is going to check their brain at the door and start thinking, well, I'm only going to do what I'm told to do because it looks like that's how it works. So we had to be careful, as Scott suggested, which one of these we hold. I think either one is really bad. You can't just be overly optimistic. You kind of have to work your way through it. And certainly the other one is awful, thinking that this is as good as it gets and I will never amount to much. That is a waste of talent right there when you get that mindset.
I definitely agree. Interesting conversation. I've learned a lot, laughed a lot. This was a great show. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Scott.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharif. First of all, thanks everybody that's on this today. This has been really great to be able to share. You know, my real passion, my work is really with people that have come to that roadblock or that being stuck that's in leadership, an entrepreneur, business owner. Those are my people. Those are the people that I'm best able to help. And so, you know, if you're interested, or you're feeling like, okay, I've tried everything on my own, I'm whatever, reach out to me. I'm at confidencecoach.org. I do a 90-minute session with people to help them get unstuck, to help them realize what that is and work through that. And, you know, I do that as free. I don't charge for any of that. But if you find yourself kind of in that and some of what we've all talked about today resonated, I'd love to talk with you about that and see if there's something we can do to help you. And if not, like Katrina said, there's other people that we work with that we can refer you to and that type of thing. But yeah, this has just been a blast. This is what I do. I have these type of conversations with leaders. And so thank you, Sharifa. This has been awesome.
You are so welcome. Thank you, Scott. 90 minutes. I think that's unheard of. I mean, I've heard 15 minutes. I've heard of 30 minutes. I've heard of an hour, but 90 minutes. Has the wife approved this 90 minutes? Because I know she's on a team somewhere.
Well, here's the secret. She's the owner. I work for her.
Did she approve 90 minutes?
Yeah. So this was her idea. So I'm totally free. I'm like, I don't have to worry about the consequences. Yeah. So
I love that.
You know, it's about serving people and it's about helping people and it's our passion. And you know, we've really found the more we give, the more we participate in even things like this, Sharifa, what you're doing, the more people we help, the better it all goes. So yeah, we have no problem with giving and giving first it all works out. It's amazing how it comes back to you from places you never thought. And you're like, well, how did this client come to us? How do we? And, you know, then you go back through and you go, okay, it's just about serving people and helping them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. John, what do you have for us?
I had a lot of fun here, Sharifa, as well. I appreciate the being part of this panel, and I hope we can do it again at some future date. That'd be a lot of fun. I encourage people to connect with me on LinkedIn, Value Transformation on LinkedIn, or you can go to the www.valuetransform.com, shoot me an email from over there, or just contact me in any way, ask me something, how can I help, and I'll do what I can. If you're looking for this morning I had somebody on LinkedIn ask me if they could refer them to a project management gig someplace. And I'm going to do that later today as soon as I figure out where to push that or put that. So I'm like Scott said, anything I can do to make things better for you, I appreciate being able to do that.
Well, I appreciate you being here today. The way I'm able to have 5 guests a day, 5 shows per week, is because I have so many returning guests. They have a great time, or maybe we didn't have enough time to discuss everything they wanted to discuss. So I always say, come back. But if you want to come back, John, I'd advise you go to AskSharifa.com today and grab a seat, because I'm currently booked through the end of April. So we don't want to wait until April to try to come back. Katrina, what do you have for us?
So let me just piggyback off of what everything that was said today. Obviously, we all have passion for what we do. And going back to what Scott said earlier, I started doing this because someone said, you should probably charge for that. You should probably charge for that. And then at that point, that's when I decided to put everything in one place. And that's when I wrote the book. So it became best-selling, Steal Your Skills from Corporate. And there are 8 steps in there. And I believe in people, and I believe you can do that on your own if you want to. However, if you're like me and you need some one-on-one, you need coaching through it, you need other tips and tactics to get through the hurdle of leaving corporate to become an entrepreneur, I'm there. I've gone through the transformation. I know how to handle the transformation. All I am is structure. I have 30 years of corporate and structure. So I know how to structure your business, along with being that support to help you get through the emotional toll of the corporate breakup. So I would like to leave by saying, if God doesn't limit us, then we shouldn't limit ourselves.
Yeah. I love that. Powerful words to end this show. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Whether you're watching this show 4 days from now, 4 months from now, or 4 years from now, it doesn't really matter. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you for going ahead and sharing the show. But I always ask, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to help you, to give you to share their story with you, and to be of service to you. So please support them. Visit their websites. The link is in the Facebook post, and follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Connect with them on LinkedIn. Connect with them by sending an email. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.